world famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com, and welcome to this Monday as we begin another week of our particular brand of radio. There's radio, then there's our show, and we're very, very proud of that. Phil Hendry here along with Margaret Gray, Bud Dickman, and Robert Leonard. Some things happening in the world of sport. Bud, you and Steve, of course, had your hands full yesterday with that big game between New England and the Pittsburgh Steelers, which turned out to be quite the debacle, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty much a debacle.
I think the word is debacle, by the way.
No, I know. I'm just messing around.
Yeah, well, it was.
What are you doing, man? You wiping your mouth? Just talk. What are you wiping from your mouth?
He had a whole bag of Lay's potato chips while you were waiting to go on the air.
Not a whole bag. Well, in any event, it was the most points ever surrendered by a Pittsburgh defense.
Yeah, that 55 points.
55 points the Pittsburgh Steelers yielded to a increasingly red-hot New England offense. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, as they like to say, Gary Kubiak, the head coach of the Houston Texans, had some kind of a health issue, and he's resting comfortably now, but one of the things that was noted by people on Twitter and elsewhere was the insensitive reaction by NFL fans to Gary Kubiak's misfortune, Gary Kubiak's health issue. While I'm sure Texan fans were concerned, the rest of the fans around the league were, should I say, surprisingly disinterested, and in some instances even... everybody, as the saying goes, everybody wants to get into the act. You know, everybody wants to be a part of the act. These days, everybody's a comedian. You know, everyone, at least maybe that's what I notice, because over on Twitter or Facebook where I am, because of what I do, I guess maybe everybody's trying to be funny to either impress me or other people that are in a similar line of work. And one of the things about being an amateur as opposed to a professional is knowing when to, make a joke about something, and knowing when not to, and knowing when the audience is going to forgive you for something, and knowing when the audience may not forgive you for something.
Well, how do you feel you do with that?
I think for the most part I'm pretty good with it.
Really?
Yes. Can you name a time when I've said something insensitive that has redounded against me? I'm not talking about whether or not the audience loves me per se, or finds me more endearing than other radio hosts. I'm just saying, can you name me a time when I've made a joke that has gotten the majority of the listeners on my back about something?
Well, some of the jokes you make about Frank.
What are you talking about? Frank talks like he's dead from the neck up.
Dead from the neck up. Did you hear what he just said?
I did. And sometimes Frank... No, that's wrong. You shouldn't say that. Seriously, Bud.
No, well, you talk about a guy getting all a gender.
But we do kid about his gender confusion.
I don't like the dead from the neck up crack.
Well, when a guy can't figure out which gender somebody is, it's dead from the neck up sounds like a pretty good description. What's your point?
I would think that the audience is on my side.
On your side, protecting a husband? Sure. On my side, finding it funny that a guy calls a guy who is a he a she.
A guy calls a guy... You see what I'm saying? You don't make any... Hold on for a minute. I'm sorry, Phil, but I had to do that.
Yeah, you had to do that because I'm disagreeing with you.
No, because I think you're outraging the sensibilities of your audience. That's all I've got to say about that.
Yeah, you don't want to say nothing about it.
Would you shut up? I'm not talking to you.
Well, he beat you with an argument. You won't let him, win.
What do you mean I won't let him win?
All right, enough. I just told you, I think that when Frank starts talking like he's, quote, dead from the neck up...
I will not have my husband spoken of that way.
All right, when Frank starts confusing gender, and we make fun of that, I think the audience is fine with that.
You do?
Yes. Yes, I do. I don't think the audience would be fine with me mocking him as your husband, saying, ha-ha, you got a really messed up husband, ha-ha. No, we don't even make it personal about Frank. We just think that the malady that he has is kind of weird. Anyway, Texans coach Gary Kubiak collapsed on the Reliant Stadium turf at halftime on Sunday night's game versus the Colts. He was rushed to the hospital where the Texans announced doctors discovered he had not suffered a heart attack. On Monday, the Texans said Kubiak went through a battery of tests at the hospital, that he was admitted overnight, and that he will remain there for at least the next 24 hours. The team also said the coach was lightheaded and dizzy before he kneeled on the sidelines Sunday night. but that he's now in the company of his family, and he's in good spirits. Our primary concern is, of course, with Gary's health and well-being, Texans General Manager Rick Smith said in the statement. There have been so many people throughout the city and across the country that have reached out to express their love and support. That's good to hear, because, like I said, it was noticeable on Twitter.
Bill, I think Twitter is filled with imbeciles. You know my opinion about that. And I think that you had it right the first time.
I go on a Twitter, and you do too.
I know I do, and I know you do. And in keeping with Phil's wishes, I won't make any personal comment. But I will say it again. Twitter is filled, brimming, with idiots.
Yeah, and you're looking at me.
Yes, if I'm looking at you, I'm looking at you.
Okay, so Twitter's brimming with idiots. And yeah, so that was the reaction I gathered from Twitter. However, it's nice to know that there is an outpouring of support. Defensive coordinator Wade Phillips, who was the interim coach on Sunday, told NBC after halftime of the Texans' loss to the Colts, Kubiak was taken to the hospital for precautionary measures. ESPN reported Kubiak was treated at the hospital with medicine that's designed to break up clots consistent with people who suffer strokes. More specifically, Adam Schefter writes Kubiak received tissue plasminogen activator, a protein that breaks down these clots. On behalf of the Kubiak family, said the Texans and the Houston Texans, we appreciate the concern of the fans, the media, and the NFL.
Well, there you go. He had a stroke.
No, that's not necessarily the case. That's not necessarily the case.
Why not?
Because they may be doing that as a precaution. Maybe they don't really know what happened to him. Now, they may be, symptomatically, they may be saying, well, this could be a stroke. Given the man's age, it could be a stroke. If he was a younger man, maybe they think it's low blood sugar or something. Maybe he's passing out because he didn't have enough to eat, you know.
Well, that's a little on the ridiculous side, don't you think? He drops to his knees. He's holding his head.
There was nothing in here about him holding his head. I remember I almost passed out at the gym.
Yeah, we already heard this story.
Is this when you almost passed out and the woman at the wheatgrass shake counter said, catch him, he's falling?
Yeah.
We've heard it.
Well, the audience, maybe some of them haven't heard it.
Yeah, there might be two or three.
Okay. Well, for the two or three listening that haven't heard it, I almost passed out once at a gym in South Florida, and it was the result of having not eaten that morning. I was going and going and going, and then I got off work. I went to the gym. I started working out. I hadn't had a thing to eat. I don't know if that's the case with him. I doubt it. They probably already asked him, but I just think that the National Football League fan community sometimes can be really just even too much for me. And, man, I can take just about anything. I mean, all the dumb that I have to deal with in my life, man, I can take just about all the dumb you got to throw at me, man. But those people, they really put the pressure on you. Meanwhile, the Miami Dolphins have had a case of bullying. You ready for that? We're going to come back and talk with head coach Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy and discuss a little bit about the Dolphin case and also the Kubiak case, Gary Kubiak, his health and well-being, and we hope, of course, he is fine. World-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number is 855-500-7445. I'm playing this song because Bud hates it.
Yo!
We'll be right back. World-famous Phil Henry Show. World-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. Welcome back here, and we got, Vernon Dozier and I'm going to jump on the line with us here, and we also have Joe Dickhead. We don't have Joe doing any of these picks any longer, because it sounded to me like, maybe I shouldn't say this with Joe hanging on the line, but it sounded to me like he was having a stroke.
Well, why do you say that?
Well, those Joe Dickhead picks with the professor, are you kidding me? I mean, that guy was the stuff, though. They couldn't even pronounce the names of the cities right. But at least we've got Joe to give us some, some view as to some of the news, the inside workings of the National Football League, shall we say. First off, though, Coach Dozier here from Belmar Academy, as we discuss with him Gary Kubiak. Hey, Coach, what do you think when you see something like this happen to coaches? And I see it happen more and more, especially at the professional level. And it's not just football. You know, you see basketball coaches, I don't know who it was, but in recent years I've seen a couple of basketball coaches suffer some kind of a sideline episode. I don't want to call it an attack.
Well, you know, we're working really hard. We are. I don't think anybody really understands what it is that a coach has to put up with. We're working very hard. We're working from 6 in the morning until sometimes 10, 11 o'clock at night. We sleep at the office. That means we don't get home during the season to see our families, but maybe once or twice a week. And, of course, with all of that work you put in, you've also got a bunch of fans. I don't know if there's... You know, I don't mean to cause a problem here, but I don't think there's too much you can say about a fan that hasn't been said in the negative, at least among my peers, maybe in the newspapers and in fan clubs. Football sports fans in general think that they're just the smartest people in the world, but among coaches we know better, and we got to deal with them. So you come off the field. I remember years ago, When I was with the USFL, I was with the New Orleans Breakers, and we would come off the field, and it was part of the job of the coaches to go and meet a group of fans in the Booster Club. They had a bar there at the Superdome. And we'd have to go and actually sit down with these fans and answer their questions. Now, by the end of the game, these people are drunk. And I got to sit down there. I was a defense coordinator, and we had, I don't know, five or six of the coaches there, including our head coach at the time. And
who was the head coach there?
We had Billy Hammond at the time was the head coach. This was different. I think when we come down to New Orleans, it was Billy Hammond. And you got to answer these questions. And you finally, and I know I did this a couple times. I said, you know, you got the wrong guy here. I'm getting up. I'm leaving. And I remember one of them said, where are you going? And I said, who are you talking to me? And they said, yeah. I said, I'm leaving. I said, I'm not going to answer any more of these questions. They're the stupidest questions I've ever heard. I think you need to learn a little bit more about football before you start asking me questions like that. And this guy gave me some lip.
What'd he say?
Well, he said a couple of choice things I'm not going to repeat. And I said to him, now, what did you say? And he repeated it. So I grabbed him by his shirt. I pulled him over this kind of barrier they had between the fans and the coaches. I pulled him over this barrier by the shirt, and we were partway outside. Just parked outside was my Jeep. I had a Jeep Wrangler, and I bounced this guy off the hood of my Jeep Wrangler about three times, just head first, bang, 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 and then dropped him on the pavement. Now later on, the team wanted me to apologize to this guy, and I said I'm not going to apologize to him. I said, they want to press criminal charges, go right ahead. Well, this guy had two black eyes. I think I knocked out one of his teeth, but to his credit, he didn't press any charges. And those guys, New Orleans police didn't. That day, I quit, and I came out to California. I was homeless for about a year. And I mean, I was sleeping in a park in Burbank on top of a picnic table. That's what I let myself in for after I bounced that guy off the hood of my Jeep Wrangler, dropped him on the pavement, and then quit my job.
All right, so you quit your job with the New Orleans Breakers after bouncing this fan off this hood. Did you? You said he had two black eyes?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I say to his credit, he did not file charges. To his credit, he did not file charges. He did not. I got a hand to the guy. I don't even know what his name is. But he took his, as they say, he took his beating like a man. And I left New Orleans the next day. I quit, just ahead of being fired, probably. And I went out to California, which is where I am now, and I spent the next year on a park bench in a park in Burbank, sleeping on top of a picnic table.
You're kidding? For a whole year?
For a whole year. I mean, it wasn't the same picnic table, but I moved around. And during the day, I would sleep in movie theaters, sold blood. You know, and I got down to a couple things. I'm not proud of this, but you would follow a woman, and you wouldn't do anything to her. You wouldn't do anything to her. You'd just follow her. And she'd just turn around, and she'd finally say, okay, just take, what do you want? Just leave me alone. And you wouldn't have to say anything. She'd pull her purse, you'd pull her wallet out of her purse and start handing you money. And I would say, you know, have a very pleasant evening.
Wait, did you mug people?
No, did you hear what I just said, Phil?
Well, you know, yes, I am listening to what you said. You're saying to me that you mugged somebody.
No, I did. I didn't say anything of the sort.
No, he said he just follow him.
He said he was following them, but Vernon, that is like terrorizing someone.
Whoa. I didn't say a word.
You followed them with the intention of scaring them so they'd give you money, didn't you?
I didn't say a word. I never raised my hand. I never even asked for money.
No, but you didn't have to. The mere act of following them, was this at night? I'm taking it was at night.
Yes, it was at night.
All right, so that the very action that you took was of trying to terrorize these women.
You know, you guys are not listening to me. I said...
Vernon, hold on for a minute. If you're following these women and your intention is to get money from them, then you're terrorizing them.
Oh, so they can't just give me money.
Well, why do you suppose they're giving you money? Because you're so handsome? Because you're so charming?
Hey, let me tell you something. I don't know why they gave me money.
Why were you following them?
I was following them because I thought I knew them.
Oh, get out of here, man. That's not what you just said. What you just said was that you followed them that you wouldn't say a word, they'd turn around and give you money.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they would do.
You're not being honest. It's a criminal act, and the fact that you took that fan and, quote, bounced him off the hood of your Wrangler is also an indication of a violent, destructive temper. And you're homeless, and you're terrorizing women. I can't believe that you're actually admitting these things to us.
Well, then I'll tell you what you do, Margaret. You talk to the football fans of New Orleans, Louisiana, or any city in America, because the point that I'm making right here is that that's what they drove me to by their stupid questions at the end of a football game that we worked our rear ends off to win, and sometimes we didn't, sometimes we didn't, but we got to sit there in this booster club environment and answer questions of about, I don't know, 200 or 300 idiots who don't know anything about football. I mean, they know less than nothing about football. I got to sit and I got to answer all these questions. No wonder it drove me to what it did.
Why didn't you just get out of football, man? I mean, why?
Well, because that's my profession. That's what I know.
I understand that, but you let it get to you to the point where you, and now, you know, you're not out of profession, you're not out of football, you're out of professional football, you're coaching a high school team.
Yeah, and that's exactly the way I like it.
And you're also teaching school, which I guess, do you like doing that?
I absolutely love it. See, what I believe, Phil, more than anything else in this world, you don't compromise in this world. If you have a set of beliefs, you stick to that set of beliefs. And for me, it was important for me to not compromise, to tell that fan that day when he says, "Hey, you," as soon as he said, "Hey, you," I knew it was on. That's when I said, "Boy, this is going to be good. I don't know how long I'm going to last this one out." Because when that guy said, "Hey, you," it was all I could do to hold myself back. I turned around and said, "Yeah." And he starts, "Hey, why don't you guys this and that?" I said, "You know what?" I said, "Just hold it right there, because everything that's coming out of your mouth, you know, I might as well just toss it all into a cat box for all the good it's doing." And that's when he said the magic words, "F, you know what comes next."
Oh, he did?
Oh, yeah.
That guy said F you?
Yes, he did.
Well, it still doesn't forgive the fact that you physically assaulted him.
I didn't physically assault him so much as I picked him up over the guardrail, over this separation.
Yeah, well, yeah, you did. You grabbed him by the shirt, you pulled him outside, didn't you?
Yeah, I pulled him outside. The guy said F you to me. Don't you call that an assault?
Not necessarily, no. And I know that probably cops wouldn't think it was either. They would call that probably very, very provocative. But the fact that you bounced the guy's head... You know, here we have you in a violent encounter with a fan in New Orleans, and then the next year you are homeless, sleeping on a picnic bench.
That's right. I put up with a lot, but I did it for principle.
For principle. And for principle, you were following women and scaring them and getting money from them.
I did not say any... If I follow a woman, because maybe I know her...
And you know that you're being dishonest about that.
Look, Phil... First of all, I never put a gun in anybody's ribs. And a point that I'm trying to make here more than anything else, rather than compromise my beliefs, which I think would weaken the fiber of any society, I decided that I would sleep on a picnic bench. I had a knife, which I never used on anybody, except for one guy, and I didn't use it on him, but a guy tried to wake me up. And when I rolled over, I see this guy, and he's, like, smiling at me, and I had my hand on that knife.
What were you going to do?
This guy tried to get, you know, cute with me.
Well, what did you think it was?
I thought maybe it might be one of these pickups or something, you know. What is... I thought I was coming on here to talk about Kubiak.
You are. It's an amazing story. Hold on. Vernon Dozier with us here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
When he's following women and scaring the living hell out of these people, I don't understand it.
Well, I don't either. And the whole point of it is that, you know, if you're scaring people just by walking behind them, you don't have to say anything to them. You don't have to pull a gun. You don't have to do anything. Just walk on.
Sometimes.
Thank you.
Oh, my God, I love this. Oh, my God.
We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Given all.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. Welcome back, and with me is Coach Vernon Dozier. I'm going to continue to discuss with him the relative health and safety of coaches. We saw Gary Kubiak of the Houston Texans collapsing on the sideline yesterday. And maybe this is just something that I care about. Maybe the average fan could care less. Maybe the average fan is, well, that's tough. You know, that's the breaks. But I think it goes to show you the dedication, but it also goes to show you it's sometimes the fragility of the health of some of these men, even if they are, even if they do have a history of athletic competition, obvious conditioning, and a physique or a constitution perhaps that is stronger than most, the pressure of that gig, man, must be unbelievable. On the line with us here from Burbank is Coach Vernon Dozier. We're going to take some phone calls too, Coach. But before we do, I wanted to, I don't want to get into your life as a homeless man in in Burbank, you know.
Look, you know, Phil, I can understand that there might be a little bit of humor to the, but I'm saying to you that I chose homelessness over coaching. I think that that's a significant statement to make. I chose to be a homeless man, sleeping on a picnic table, carrying a knife, sleeping in movie theaters. I chose that life rather than be a coach. And for one solid year, that's what I did, until finally I couldn't stand it any longer. And
well, what made you change?
Yes, I asked the same thing. Why did you change your mind?
Well, I you know, there comes a time where you can't, and I'm being very, very honest and sincere when I tell you that You wake up one day and you can't stand the way you look any longer. You sure can't stand the way you smell. You stink. You need a bath. You've needed a bath for a year.
Well, you took a bath in 1 year, even though you were homeless, you didn't get a bath?
Well, where am I going to bathe? I don't have a home. I do not live in a home. So where am I going to bathe?
Well, that's true, but because you're homeless, one would think that you have no money. How did you eat?
I had money. There were jobs that I did. There were some jobs that you took, day jobs.
Well, and you mugged women?
I did not mug any women. I did not threaten anybody.
Well, you've already said that you followed them with the intent of getting them nervous enough to give you money.
I did not pull a weapon on them. I didn't even come within 3 or 4 feet of them. They would just turn around, open up their purses, and give me money. Hell, for all I knew, they thought I was attractive or something.
Oh, I'm sure that was the case. You just got done telling us you couldn't stand the way you smelled after a year.
Well, you know something there, and I shouldn't say this, Margaret, but you know this is true. There's some women that's exciting to them. The smell of a man who's been living in a sewer excites them.
What are you talking about? I'm a woman. I've never in my life encountered any attitude like that.
Well, I don't think you're being honest. You know as well as I do that for some women, not all, but for some women, a man stinking like an open sewer guns their engine like you wouldn't believe, and...
All right, well, let's not even go down that road, shall we? He did say some women, not all, Margaret, so it could be a certain class of women. I don't know. I want to get back to... first of all, I want to get a phone call in here. I got Alf calling from Santa Barbara, so we'll take his phone call, but then I want to talk about Gary Kubiak, because we have not even... come close to Gary Kubiak in discussing that.
Well, hey, Phil, listen, I do want to talk about Coach Kubiak because I have a great deal of admiration for him.
Hold on. Alf, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, Coach, how are you?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah, let me tell you something, Coach. I am the guy that on Sunday afternoon or on Friday afternoon or Saturday afternoon, I put a few dollars down on a game. That's how I enjoy my life. This is what I do. I'm the guy that puts the money down on the game, and you are the guy that goes out there on a Sunday afternoon and makes these boneheaded decisions and makes these idiotic decisions that cost a lot of people money.
Look, at it. My job is not to serve gamblers, okay?
Well, I'm not betting against you. I'm betting for you. And guys like you, and let me tell you something, guys like you cost me thousands of dollars because you're out there screwing the pooch.
Hey, first of all, I'm a high school coach now.
That's where you belong. Well, that's where you belong. Because as far as I...
Okay, we had to dump him. Our number, 855-500-7445. 855-500-7445. Did you want to comment on the part of it that...
On the part of it you could air?
Yeah.
let me tell you something. A guy like that, that's exactly the guy that I encountered. Not that guy, but it's exactly the kind of guy that I encountered after those games when I was coaching for the Breakers. I pulled that guy outside and bounced his head off the hood of my car. A guy like that is begging for it.
Well, what he's saying is this, that you guys are ultimately responsible for not just the entertainment of the fans, but you're responsible for a fair amount of money that is gambled on these games, and you know it, and you don't seem to take it seriously.
I'm not there to service the spread on a football game. I'm there to win a football game for our fans. I'm there to win a football game for the organization, but I am not there to serve the gambling community by making sure that the spread, that the team doesn't run afoul of the spread, whatever that may be. And I'll tell you again, and for that guy to call up and use the language that he used, like I'm responsible for that old man. I think he said he's living up there by himself.
He said he's living in a studio apartment by himself. He's a widow, a widower, and I don't know what else he said.
Well, and he also said that he buried his wife off of Angeles Crest Highway, which I really...
Well, that is an unusual place to bury a woman, but...
I think the L.A. County Sheriff ought to look into that.
But the point is this. All right, so let's just blow off what those comments were that guy made, because it's really not... I agree with you. I don't think it has anything to do with what you do for a living. Let's talk about Gary Kubiak, okay? Let's talk about his health and what he's facing and what you guys face. Now, you gave up coaching, you know?
Yes, I did.
For a solid year, rather than be in that position, and it seems that you know inherently what it is that Kubiak and other coaches face.
Oh, I absolutely do, Phil, because it's not just winning. Because winning sometimes doesn't get it done. You win, but then you have a guy like this last guy that I talked to. You may win, but maybe you didn't win by enough points. And this jackass, you know, he's got a problem. But Gary Kubiak has got a tougher problem. He's down in Texas. He has a football team that has had some good years, and they've fallen on some hard times. And a lot of his is expected of him. Okay. And then you have, and that's just from the press and the fans in general. Then you have the live fan, the active fan, these fans at the game, and they can holler at you. I hear them. You know, I'll stand on the sideline. I can hear these people calling me every name in the book, calling me an MF, two-bit, you know, a CS, MF, you know, a DS, all the initials, a GD, MF, this kind of thing, FU, all of that.
Now, you're the coach of a high school football. Are you saying this happens now?
Oh, yeah, it happens now. Are you kidding? Of course it happens now.
But you're saying that all of this language is used, directed at you, even though you're coach of a... And you're a head coach of a Catholic school.
I was going to say, that's a Catholic high school that you're coaching at.
It doesn't make any difference if it's a Catholic high school. That makes no difference. This is the CIF. This is the California Interscholastic Federation. This is the athletic sanctioning body of the entire state of California for high school football. This is a big, big organization. State's so big that we have a northern section champion, a southern section champion. And I got parents, and I've got the press, and I've got even the priests. I'm not saying the priests use that kind of language, but you've got the parents sitting there in the stands calling you every filthy name in the book. And then on top of everything else, you have the student body, and they're doing the same thing, because, as you know, there's a student section.
Talk about high school students now.
That doesn't make any difference if they're high school students. There's a student section where they all gather, and they do their cheers, and they have the cheerleaders, and then from the student section, I can hear them calling me. I mean, you name it, man. They outdo the adults for the filth.
That is absolutely unacceptable that high school students, they're not even adults, calling you these names.
But that's football. I'm telling you, that's football. And I do well with it. I don't collapse on the sideline because, thank God, I've got a stronger constitution. Maybe I don't know what it is. But I do have to take it, you know, I do have to get a little bit of, I guess you might say, I got to blow off steam. That's why I bounced that guy off the hood of that car. That's why every now and again I got to punch a wall. That's why every now and again I got to smack around a parent.
Whoa, hold on for a minute. What do you mean smack around a parent?
Are you striking parents?
Every now and again. Every now and again. I didn't say that I do it every night. I don't.
But you smack around a parent.
Let me say this, Phil.
No, I want to ask you, did you just say that you blow off steam by smacking some parent around?
I have, in the past, slapped a bunch of... It's something that the administration of the school allows me, because of the pressure that I'm under, to grab a hold of at least one parent and slap their face a few times to get...
And what do you do if the parent retaliates?
Well, they're not going to... I haven't had that happen yet. I mean, I'm a fairly formidable man. I've got, I'm built. I've got pretty good-sized arms, and I've got a good-sized neck, so I don't think any parent's going to...
Has any parent ever retaliated?
Yeah, you must have some parent want to smack you back.
Maybe they want to, but they don't. I slap them, and I say, that was just for me to let off steam to get out of here, and they turn and they hightail it out of there. I've had to slap a few of them in front of the kids. I hate to do that.
What do the kids say?
Oh, they don't say anything. I tell them, this is between me and that parent. I don't want you guys to say anything. I'm sorry that I
got to tell you something, Coach. That is, for my way of thinking, that, and for anybody's way of thinking, that's just out of bounds, man. Smacking around a parent. Does the school let you do this? I guess they do.
The school recognizes that. Let's not get too high and mighty. Okay.
We're not being high and mighty, Coach. We're talking about you embarrassing a parent in front of the students, as well as just humiliating them.
I have to do it in order for me to do my job. Do you understand?
It doesn't make any difference. Your job is not that important that you're going to pick up a parent and smack him around so that you can let off steam and do your stupid football coach job.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Now you're talking about my job.
I don't care if I'm talking about your job.
You think what you do is more important?
I don't have to smack anybody around. In fact, usually I get smacked around.
You get smacked around?
Figuratively speaking, but yeah, I don't have to smack anybody. Hold on for a minute, Coach, if you still have the guts to...
Man, I don't believe that. He's going to pick up a parent and smack him?
That's what he said. Unbelievable, man. We're going to be right back here on the Phil Henry Show. It's football, and it's a Catholic high school, and a Catholic high school, I don't know, Catholic colleges. I mean, wherever football is God, man.
And so he smacks a parent around. He bounced a guy's head off the hood of a car. This man is used to a culture, the violence. I'm Margaret Gray.
Well, isn't that nice? We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. World famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. And on with us here this evening is Vernon Dozier of Belmar Academy. We're talking about the life and times of head coaches. Gary Kubiak, the head coach of the Houston Texans, collapsed on the sidelines. We understand he's going to be fine. But the pressure of that job, just like any job that, is a high-pressure job, I can't think of too many jobs that aren't, you know, if you take it seriously. And I think that's both the interesting aspect to this discussion, and also its bedeviling. Also, it's rather bedeviling aspect, and that is that no matter what you do, if you take it seriously, it can be a high pressure job. Vernon on the line with us. Let's go to Lloyd calling us from Alhambra tonight. Lloyd, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, Phil, I'm enjoying your program. I want to ask Coach Dozier a question, if I could, Coach.
Yes, sir.
I'm a Korean War veteran. I'm just hit my 80th birthday.
Well, congratulations.
Congratulations, Lloyd.
Thank you. But at the age of 80, and I had my own business, I had a heating and plumbing business in Alhambra, California, and raised a daughter. I now have a grandson. I've been married since 1985, and we're going on 60 years married, my wife and I.
Very good, sir.
Okay. And I don't care what gets thrown at me during the day. Ever since Korea, it's all gravy. It's all downhill. So, you know, I listen to a guy like you, and I've got to wonder, what's the big, what's the big rock you got to move around all day long? It sounds to me like you got it pretty easy, mister.
Well, is the host there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Well, you're not going to weigh in. Nobody's going to weigh in on my side.
Well, I mean,
we're waiting to see how you deal with it.
Don't wait for anyone to bail you out.
Yeah. Hey, hold on. Nobody's got to bail me out. But I don't think I was anticipating being assaulted like that without somebody coming to my aid and saying, "Hey, hold the phone." But I guess that's not the way this. I guess that's not the way they play the game around here.
My comment still holds. I'm almost 80 years of age. I went through a war and everything, and what you go through with your little football and your little coaching, it's nothing, friend, compared to what I've done. So I don't know what you're doing the crybaby act for, you know?
Hey, let me just say this. I'm not doing a crybaby act. Mr. Hendry asked me how well coaches deal with these situations. I deal with them very well.
You deal with them well? You were homeless, you said, for a year.
Yeah, that's how I dealt with it. I got out of the profession. I spent a year sleeping on a picnic table. Now, I don't know if you heard me.
Yeah, I heard all about it.
You heard all about it, huh? So have you ever spent a year sleeping on a picnic table?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't do anything so stupid. I've got a job, and I've got a home, and I've got a bed I sleep in. Why would I want to... Boy, you... Man, you making me laugh.
Hey, well, let me ask you something, pal. What is so funny about spending a year sleeping on a picnic table?
Where do you want me to begin? Why didn't you get a job and sleep in a bed?
Because my job is coaching, and the pressure of having to talk to an alcoholic... like the guy whose head I bounced off the hood of my Jeep, and these parents that call me every name in the book.
Well, let me tell you, if I was a fan...
Hey, I'm not done yet, sir.
Well, hold on. If I was, I would have called you the same thing. And I can tell you one other thing, too.
I'm not done, and, you know, you can say all you want. I'm not... I slept on a picnic table, okay?
I'll tell you one other thing. If I'd been the fan that you tried to manhandle there at that time, you say you bounced a man's head... try to bounce my head off of a Jeep Wrangler, and they would be finding pieces of you. Even today, they would still be finding pieces of you in and around that stadium. That's how I feel about that.
Is that right?
You better believe it.
They'd be fine. You know something? The last guy that talked to me like that...
What'd you do? Bounce his face off of the hood of a Jeep?
No, I didn't, sir. No. I didn't do that at all.
Well, did you start to cry?
No, but I will tell you, they had to pick his DNA up with a sponge.
Is he...
Yeah, he's gone, and so is Dieter Caller, unless Dieter Caller's there. Let me see. You there, sir?
Hello?
Okay, sir, are you there?
Am I here? Yes, I'm here. What do you mean, am I here?
I'm sorry, so you're... Okay... All right, thank you very much for your call. The gentleman hung up.
Oh, no, I knew he hung up because he sounded like a big...
All right, well, I don't think that the whole DNA with a sponge thing, I'm not going to take that seriously.
I'm not taking it seriously either. I know Vernon. We've had him on the program before. He's got a real temper problem. He also has hypertension. And he shouldn't be talking the way he's talking, because that man's going to, of all the people that'll have strokes.
Yeah, that time he almost had a stroke that one time.
Well, when he was on the show talking, I forget what he was talking about a few weeks ago, he almost, it sounded like he had a hypertension. We probably ought to give him a rest. What do you got?
Get the guy calling back now. This is the guy.
Tell him that when he hung the phone up on me.
Hold on for a minute there, pal. You're on the air, and this is Lloyd, right?
Yes, sir. When he hung the phone up on me, he was basically making this statement that he can't handle it. And if you can't handle the kitchen, then get out of the stove. Is all right?
You got it, pal. If you can't handle the kitchen, get out of the stove.
What?
I don't think he... I think he means well. Let me put it that way. All right, speaking of meaning well, guess who's launching a rocket to Mars? Guess who is mounting a mission to Mars? Can you guess?
America?
India.
India?
India's going to be launching a... And this is the thing about what I just said, you know, the drag about all of that is that in a lot of ways, it's kind of a joke, you know. I shouldn't say that, but it is kind of a joke, you know, when you say India and mission to Mars. But we'll find out whether it's got legs, if you'll pardon the use of the term. World famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, 855-500-7445, and go online and get a backstage pass and visit us at philhenryshow.com. We'll be right back.